Reality with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hi and welcome to the 78th episode of Robots. I'm Jana and today we'll explore blended reality, a world where virtual reality comes to life using robots. The Playtime Computing System was developed by Professor Cynthia Breezel's Personal Robots Group at the MIT Media Lab. It's designed to get kids away from TV and computer screens and into an environment which they can actively explore and modify. But before we hear from some of the people involved in this project, let's listen to the latest news in robotics with Christine.
During this week's Google I/O event, two new great features of the popular Android phone operating system were announced. The most important, from a robotic point of view, is that the new Android Open Accessory Standard is based on the popular Arduino design. This allows for easy communication and integration of Android phones and hardware via USB. In addition, Google announced its Android at Home framework, which aims at interconnecting home appliances, devices, and gadgets into a single network. With both announcements, Google seems to be taking a significant step towards hardware and robotics. Cornell University's walking robot Ranger, which you may remember from our report on its previous world record, has surpassed itself by walking an unprecedented 65 kilometers or 40.5 miles non-stop without a recharge. This beat Ranger's previous world record of 23 kilometers, which itself topped a previous record of Boston Dynamics Big Dog of 21 kilometers without refueling. The record was again achieved on Cornell's Barton Hall racetrack, with Ranger completing 307 laps in just under 31 hours, which makes for an average speed of 2 kilometers per hour or 1.3 miles per hour. The current robot is remote controlled. The researchers are now working on adding automatic steering. For more information on this week's Google I/O event or Cornell University's walking robot Ranger, visit our website at www.robotspodcast.com.
Our reporter Sabine got to see blended reality and the Playtime Computing System live in action at the MIT Open Day in celebration of the MIT's 150th anniversary. She met up with Natalie, Adam and David, three of the postgraduate researchers involved in a project that aims to get kids off the sofa and into the virtual playground. Natalie Fried is a computer scientist especially interested in human-computer interactions for children. Adam Satarpin is a computer scientist with expertise in artificial intelligence, and David Robert joined the world of robotics from an animation background. Let's hear what Sabine found out.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Robots.
Hi.
Hi.
What is the Playtime Computing System?
So the Playtime Computing System is a new research initiative that we're working on the Personal Robots Group at the MIT Media Lab. It's an immersive environment for kids and robots to play together, and we're looking at educational applications, imagination play applications, entertainment applications.
What was your motivation in making it?
So one of our motivations is that a lot of the educational technologies we see today are screen-based, and there you can get lots of rich interactions, but you're still, the kids are sitting down looking at a screen. So we really wanted to build a space where kids could run around, touch things, be kids and play in a physical way, but still have access to that rich interaction we can get through technology.
This playground is based on the notion of blended reality. What exactly is that?
Blended reality is a concept, sort of a superstructure of coupling physical reality with a digital space and sort of creating a unified coordinate system that allows assets to move seamlessly and kinetically continuously between the two spaces. So you can imagine a character on the screen that starts out as an animated character and then seamlessly blends off the screen into the physical reality with the kids as an embodied tangible robot.
Well, can you maybe describe this playground as if we were in it?
So imagine a space that's big enough for kids to run around in. There's a floor and then a wall. And both the floor and the wall have projections on them, so kind of a full-scale environment that you can project. And within that space, you can have robots running around on the floor and also props like small tables and things for children to play with.
So things like the robot is basically physical, and then it hits the screen somehow, and then it becomes part of the virtual world. How difficult is it to make this transition between the physical world and the virtual world?
So right now, it's quite difficult, actually, because we want to create the illusion that it's one character and a single personality and a single kind of kinetic model. So we have a super physics model where we try and correlate the speed of the robot in real life with the speed that it enters and exits the screen. And then we also have what we're calling a hutch, which is a little enclosure that sits either in front of or behind the screen. It opens up, and that's where the robot makes the transition. So it basically hides the robot from people's point of view, so it can be in the virtual space but still existing.
I actually saw this in reality. So the robot goes into this little HUD and really transfers to the screen, and it's almost seamless. It's really impressive. I also saw the kids playing in this playground, and they were really excited about it. What type of interactions can the kids do with this environment?
So there are a couple different sensing technologies we have in the space. We have both markerless and marker-based motion capture systems. So we've got one where you can wear hats or gloves and get really detailed information about the kids' hands, exactly where they're looking. And now we're also kind of plastering the space with Microsoft Kinects, so we can do it all markerless.
And the other form of input is the actual robot itself. So in this case, it's the first blended reality character, and it's just an initial version of what we imagine will be a whole suite of characters in this environment. But this character has the unique ability of allowing the children to replace its face with a symbolic token. So just to paint the picture and describe a little bit more, it's actually a robot that looks like an alphabet block from a children's preschool. And the face of the block can be place. So we have symbols like different letters, different numerals, as well as international symbols and icons like hearts and a mustache that actually takes you to a fun place in France.
Fun place in France?
So the place in France is another scenario we have where we're looking at second language learning. So in this case, French to begin with, but we could put in any languages. And the idea is kids will sit down and they'll play tea party with their stuffed animals. Well, if you replace a stuffed animal with a robot, that can actually interact. And the tea party can actually have projected food and things that respond to what they say. It gives them a play environment in which they can also learn.
Why did you actually choose to go for a robot?
So there are a few different reasons we went with a robot. One of them is that there's kind of a long line of research in our group that embodied and physical characters, you can have a much more social and intimate relationship with them. And, you know, the fact is kids love robots, and we could put a screen in front of them, but if it's an embodied character moving around, then we just feel like the interaction is going to be much more, and the engagement of the kids with this character is going to be a lot better.
One thing I wonder is, do they actually realize what's real and what's not?
I mean, that's actually a really interesting question. Children between the ages of 4 and 6 are developing these imaginative play faculties and pretend play, and fairly convinced that they actually do know what's happening, but they're suspending their disbelief because of the fact that the character is continuous between the physical and the virtual, the digital space. So, I mean, they may not realize what's going on, or they may realize what's going on, but regardless of the fact, it's really changing the nature of the interaction by having the robot embodied, just like Adam is saying. Instead of orienting themselves towards the screen and sitting down on a couch in a passive way, they're standing up, they're moving around, they're interacting socially with each other, interacting with the characters. It's a very different style of interaction that involves like the whole child sort of development, and that's what we're interested in.
You mentioned there's lots of way of tracking these kids. What do you actually want to learn with these experiments?
So one of the things that we're kind of building a new suite of robots that are all based around Android cell phones. And one of the things we're doing is we're capturing we're capturing all this data when the kids are in the space interacting with the robot. And we want to see what types of gestures work best for the robot teaching the kids and what types of gestures kids do when they learn best. So, you know, there are lots of rich information and gesture that could help with something like second language learning. And we want to look for more things like that.
I know you have a whole playbook full of scenarios that you want to test out. Can you maybe describe one of these?
You just described the one of the French Cafe language scenarios, right?
Mm-hmm.
I suppose the other scenario we have right now is very simple. There's three hills on the screen, and when you place a symbol on the robot in the physical space and it transmediates and appears on the screen, you then are able to see what the effect of placing the symbol is. So, for example, perhaps placing a Japanese character causes the alpha bot, which is the name of the character, to start to count to the number three, and a friend can show up from another place. So the idea is that because in the physical space you're constrained by physical reality and all the forms of sort of physical reality, the digital space, by the nature of it being extensible and being able to sort of connect to remote locations, opens up the opportunity for having that space sort of be a continuation of the play space. But the idea is that the context is experienced by the user as one blended context, but the digital part being extensible and allowing other AlphaBot friends to visit. And so in our tests and our studies that we conducted, we found it really interesting to see that children really were really engaged, not just with the character, but with the idea that they could communicate and sort of interact with other AlphaBots in other parts of the world.
What have you learned with these experiments so far?
Well, so we ran a play test recently with about 34 children, and we ran it in two conditions. And what we learned basically is that we already kind of imagined this was the case, but we've been able to confirm that children have accepted the idea of a blended reality character. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that in situations where the children were experiencing the blended reality play, they came up with far more imaginative suggestions in terms of how we should improve the robot and how we should improve the experience than when they were actually just doing the video game version, which is the control experiment. So, I mean, what we're learning slowly is that I'm trying to use a formative evaluation approach that's similar to what Sesame Street uses. And it's because the system is in its early phases, and there's a lot of really interesting things that are coming soon. But as we evaluate it, I want to make sure, and I think all of us share this view, that if we're making technology for kids, that it should be designed, you know, by them, or at least with their input. So.
What kind of improvements did they propose?
Yeah, amazing things, yeah. they really funny things. I mean, they wanted the robot to go upside down, they wanted to play soccer with them, they wanted to fly.
One of the things that's really interesting is the kids seem to want the robot to get new abilities when it transfers into the virtual world. Mm-hmm. So we always thought that it was interesting that you could give these characters special abilities, like a rolling robot can go into the virtual world and then start flying around. And that's what the kids want too. So we're thinking of all sorts of things, like how could the kids put their favorite object into the virtual world and then give that. So if they could put their favorite toy into some sort of 3D scanner that could take it into the virtual world and then give that object new capabilities, I think kids would love that. And they really just like the idea of new abilities in the virtual world.
It's awesome. I wish I could transfer to the virtual world and get wings or something.
That actually happened, right? Natalie, you can tell the story.
We actually had a couple of the kids did this, but one of them he was so interested in what was in this virtual world that he actually crawled into the portal and broke it in the process.
He tried to go through.
He really wanted to go through himself and see what happened. So now we're thinking about, well, how could you make that possible?
How do you handle these experiments? It must be tricky. I mean, we're not used to interacting with kids in our roboticist life.
I think it's really, really hugely important because you can make things for kids, but they don't mean anything unless you actually try them with kids. So it just takes a lot of people and a lot of eyes and a lot of help from their parents as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd have to say that our advisor, Dr. Cynthia Brazil, has like given us like such a great perspective on, I mean, for me, she's influenced me a lot on how I approach robotics, and because she's got these wonderful kids, and they were the very first alpha testers, I suppose. That was a really good first step, and then from then on, we've just been very lucky with the community here at MIT. Two of the preschools and a couple people help from the Harvard Graduate School of Education. And so with that kind of research team put together, it's really a mixture of a bunch of talented people have come together to help us out. And the parents and the kids, of course, decided to give their time.
And there's really another talent, which is these images. I mean, the playground looks awesome, and I know you've developed a whole computer backbone to be able to generate these scenarios. Can you describe this computer tool you're using to generate your scenarios, basically?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I would like to credit Fardad Fardi for putting together some of the imagery and really being one of the creative forces on the team. But all of us work together. It's a really interdisciplinary sort of pipeline in terms of all the things that are happening. There's robot control software that Natalie and Adam wrote. There's the embedded code running on the robot. And then there's the pipeline that runs the whole blended reality play experience. And that's designed in Touch, which is a really interesting sort of visual programming experimental media pipeline design environment that's used at Imagineering, Disney Imagineering, to put together sort of living characters and other types of experiences where children are acting with real-time characters on the screen that look like they're in a Pixar movie. In our case, we're extending that and applying that to robotics.
You actually worked, David, at Pixar before. Why did you transfer to robotics?
I worked with Pixar and a couple other studios, and I mean, I just feel really lucky to have this opportunity, and I'm interested in, you know, I'm really interested in a fruitful dialogue between animators and roboticists. I feel like we're both committed to bringing characters to life. And I think one of the unique things about Cynthia's group and all of my colleagues here is that we're all committed to not just thinking of, you know, better ways to create robots, but better ways to create social machines that are characters, in essence, that are lovable and likable and work with you. So, I don't know, what do you guys think about that?
No, absolutely. Our research group has a history of using kind of the newest animation techniques and trying to see how we can use those to bring our robots to life more. And David was kind of an expert in procedural animation, and he came in and really just added a whole new level of how we can animate these robots.
Beyond just robotics, is this the future of entertainment, something which is much more interactive?
Well, I mean, according to Variety magazine, not to name drop, that's what they're saying. I think I think the first step is to show that the idea of the blended reality character has been accepted as an extension of media, and you know, in a small way, I think we've shown that. And so now the next step is to understand how to make sure, in my opinion, you know, we don't necessarily stick the old form on the new form. So every time there's a new medium created, it's very often the case that you put the old way of doing things into it. So I think there's a lot of new opportunities and a lot of exploration needs to be done still. And I mean, the work of Natalie and Adam is really taking it to the next level, so I'm just sort of starting it up, and then they're designing applications on it right now. They're taking it, you know, hopefully we'll talk about that soon.
Yeah, so what is the next level?
On the topic of entertainment, we've thought about, and education as well, we've thought about, instead of having kids in front of a TV screen watching a story that someone else created, using this technology to let them be able to both interact with the characters off of the screen, but also put their own story into it and share it with a large audience. So that is something that would be really interesting.
How would that work?
There's, as Adam said, there's a lot of the motion capture technology that's now accessible in the home. For example, the Kinect, a lot of people are going to have them. And you can scale this down. And you can also think about having people have robots at home so the child has their favorite robot. But also there's a place they can go to that's in a science museum or in a public library that's got a larger, more immersive space that they can take their robot to. So a mix of the two.
This could totally be interesting for older people, too. I mean, I would love to create my own virtual reality interface.
Absolutely. And so right now, this system is kind of a very large space in our area, and it's got 8 projectors, and it's running on 2 graphics supercomputers. Mm-hmm. So it's not quite ready for home use, but we're definitely looking at ways we could kind of scale this back and with a single or dual projector system to allow this to, you know, be in everybody's home. And I think there could be lots of interesting application examples and richer communication modalities if
lots of people had these regardless of age.
I think I could add here that one of the things that seems to be pretty interesting to people in the HRI community is sort of the idea of long-term interaction. And I suppose if you can imagine that perhaps by extending the interaction between a person and a character onto the screen and off of the screen, onto maybe a mobile device or into a mobile robot, you know, that could be an interesting way to sort of have interesting way, a platform of research to develop long-term character interaction. So the idea that children up to the age of 7 have accepted this blended reality character as it migrates or transmediates between one form of media, the physical robot, and the screen, you can imagine that could extend itself to, you know, other ways of having the character sort of follow you around and accompany you as a personal assistant.
Are you guys thinking of any future robots you could be developing?
Absolutely. So we've already started building a whole suite of robotic characters, and there are two components that we're really excited about that are going into these new characters. The first is a cell phone. So not only do most people own smartphones now, but they're better and have more peripherals than, you know, a lot of the embedded hardware that we run robots on. So we're building expressive robots around Android cell phones, using the cameras, the displays for things like the face. We're using the speakers and microphones, just really utilizing this. And most importantly, the internet connection and the fact that you can do remote updates and you can have robots communicating over long distances and not only learning from who they're interacting with, but the general interaction modalities over the whole population.
That's interesting. Last week I spoke with Garrett from the BillyBot project, and their future vision is to create apps, basically, for these robots, which sort of goes in this direction. You would have a character app or something like that.
Definitely. I think basically a robot app store is probably going to happen.
And
I think even places like Willow Garage seem to be moving in that direction. So I think we're going to see a lot more robots in the future, not necessarily built with cell phones to do their computation, but harnessing people's cell phones a lot more to get more interactivity, to learn more about the users. And so these robotic characters we're building, they're also based on a squash and stretch platform. So one of our robots in the past was Tofu, and he was a very simple robot that had four actuators and he could kind of lean in different directions. And just using that really simple design, we found out that you can get a really surprising amount of expressivity. So now we've started building robots around Delta platforms, so parallel robots. And a similar squash and stretch appeal. We're making them fuzzy. We're making them so kids can knock them off the table and they are fine. So that's the next generation.
Yeah, the squash and stretch idea is one of the 12 principles of animation. So it's another example of how animation sort of informs our practice here.
Okay, guys. Well, excellent. Thanks a lot for explaining all this to me today.
Yeah, thanks
for having us.
Thank you.
That's it for today. As always, if you want more information or any of our past episodes, visit our website at www.robotspodcast.com. We'll be back with the next episode in 2 weeks' time. Until then, goodbye. Blend Reality with Robots. Podcast for news and views on robotics.